You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis, and today we're off to space. Well, we're off to a space that deals entirely with space, as in the final frontier. It's NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. This is Red Ground Zero for all things Mars-related with its rovers and flying devices on the solar system's fourth rock from the sun. Here's a groundbreaking, or should I say ground landing, moment from almost a decade ago to the day when the Curiosity rover arrived at its final destination.
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
Dozens upon dozens of scientists and space revelers with their blue knit tops jumping up and down like kids on a playground in front of a giant American flag, the NASA logo, and the words Jet Propulsion Laboratory, witnessing their work make an impact by every definition of the word. Well, a decade and another rover later, and Mars is still very much on the JPL radar, as are so many other NASA missions, exploring all the nooks and crannies of the universe. And overseeing the future of JPL is the center's new director, Lori Leshin. She is a space scientist and a geochemist, and she's with me right now. Lori, thank you for coming on. Thank you for this tour that we're doing today.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be with you, and welcome to JPL.
So you were there, right?
Curiosity
touched down. You were in that room.
I was not in the room with the blue shirts. The scientists, you know, they keep us in a different room. But we were all screaming just as loud. And I will tell you, it was my birthday, actually. And it was the best birthday ever.
What did you do with the Curiosity? You were in a room. Scientists stay in another room.
Well, we were watching the landing in the other room. And then the interesting thing is I'm a scientist on two of the instruments, the sensors on Curiosity. So I had spent over a decade working to get to that moment when we all got to jump up and down and scream and be thrilled. But then, you know, you would think, hey, let's all, you know, go raise a glass or something. No, it's like you had a baby born on Mars. You got to go and make sure that baby's healthy and take care of it and make sure it's okay. So we immediately, after jumping up and down for a couple of minutes, went to work.
And you got to work on another rover, which we're standing in front of, sort of. Explain
right.
What we're looking at right now.
This is a model of Perseverance, which is currently on Mars. You know, Curiosity's still going 10 years later. We're about to celebrate our 10th birthday on Mars. But Perseverance landed a year ago, February, in the height of the pandemic, right? We managed to land this beautiful rover that's kind of the size of a Mini Cooper. I mean, it's like a car on Mars. And it's driving around right now in one of the most interesting places we've ever explored on Mars, looking at a beautiful ancient river delta. Just yesterday got a great new core sample of the rock from that river delta, probably the first one we've actually taken that's actually from the river delta itself.
When you say river, you know what that means.
Yeah.
Is that what it means?
It is what it means. There isn't water flowing there today. But it's an ancient river delta, one where water flowed billions of years ago. That was the idea, to go down and explore that. And we think the rocks that form at the outflow of the water could be great at capturing evidence of ancient life on Mars. And that's what we're looking for.
NASA has so many outlets across the country. Why Mars and JPL?
Yeah, JPL is really NASA's lead for solar system exploration. So exploring the planets here in our own neighborhood. You know, it's 25 years since we landed the first tiny little rover on Mars with Sojourner, landed by Mars Pathfinder. And we've basically had a continuous presence at Mars for a quarter century, learning more and more and more, and really culminating in Perseverance, this great rover. And hopefully now we're going to bring back the rocks that Perseverance is collecting.
Do we have anything from years ago when the other rovers, Opportunity and the others that went, do we have rocks from those?
No, we have never gone to Mars and brought anything back, ever. We've never made the round trip. Think about that, right? Or you think back to Apollo when humans went to the moon and returned them safely to the Earth. That was a whole big part of it, right?
And brought moon rocks back,
and brought thousands of pounds of moon rocks back. We have none of that from Mars. And so this is our opportunity. We're standing right on the precipice of that amazing moment when we're going to get to bring things back.
Again, Mars is not the only thing.
Yes.
And we've got so much to explore. You've got some exciting stuff, and you're going to take us on a tour. Shall we go?
Yeah, let's go. I'd love to show you.
So, Lori, when you look at this campus, you see the sprawl. I mean, this is a big campus.
It is. It is. We got about 6,000 people working here, hundreds of buildings, and maybe 40 missions going at any given moment.
And you're overseeing all of it.
Yes. Yeah. We're busy. We're very busy, which is a very good thing. It means that the U.S. is continuing to explore the unknown.
Lori Leshin, you have brought us to this, it looks like an atrium in the middle of a building, right?
Yep.
You call it the clean room.
Or the high bay, because it's a very high high ceiling here, many, many stories high, and all very, very clean.
And what is being made? Because I see I guess that's a capsule?
Or it's a spacecraft.
It's a spacecraft.
It is the heart of a mission that's going to understand Jupiter's moon Europa, called Europa Clipper. It will be launching to the Jupiter system in 2024. So in 2 years, this thing will have a bunch of sensors strapped to it and solar panels that would stretch from the toe to the crown of the Statue of Liberty.
Wow.
It's gigantic.
That's what powers it.
That's what powers it, powered by the sun. It's going to go into an orbit such that it can do many, many close flybys of this fascinating icy world, which we think has an ocean underneath the icy shell. But the question is, could something else be living below that icy shell? And again, that question, are we alone in the universe? These icy moons that might have liquid water oceans are a great target to try and answer that question.
We're in the clean area, right?
Yes.
If we were to go down there, what we're overlooking, we would have to put on suits.
We call them bunny suits.
Bunny suits.
Yes, exactly. You'd have to put on shoe covers, hair covers. You'd have to put on a beard cover.
Like Silkwood, right?
Yes, no? Exactly. I guess we're trying to, nice reference there. Yeah, we're trying to make sure that we keep this room absolutely clean. And then the other thing that folks do who work on the spacecraft themselves is make sure they're electrically grounded so they don't cause a short in the electrical system.
Clean as in sterile?
Clean as in as sterile as we can make it, yes. And we also do care about transporting as few microbes as possible with us when we're going to study places that might have life, that we absolutely care about keeping things clean out there in the solar system.
So Lori, we are going back to the office from the clean room. It's so elaborate creating this kind of, you know, craft.
It's very technically challenging. I don't think people really realize how difficult it is to try to make something that's going to last for years, millions and millions of miles from here. And it's going to fly within about 15 miles of the surface of a moon of Jupiter. Imagine that.
Yeah. That's a long trip powered by the sun.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep. Exactly right. Long trip powered by the sun.
Has there been anything like that?
We have a mission right now at Jupiter that's also solar powered called Juno, which is sending back extraordinary images of the clouds of Jupiter. I urge people to go online and Google Juno images of Jupiter and find the beautiful things that we're doing.
There's not even a surface of Jupiter, right? It's mostly just gas.
Yeah, no, we don't exactly know, but yes, that's right. It's just a giant ball of gas with probably some liquid metal hydrogen towards the center.
But Europa, its moon, one of its moons.
That's right.
Does have a surface.
It does.
Yeah.
Icy surface. The moon right next to it called Io actually has a surface that's more rocky and is full of active volcanoes. It is just, it's a set of fascinating worlds in their own right. It's so great that we get to go explore them.
Well, back in the office now, here we are. And I guess I want to ask you, you know, with JPL having so much going on, you can't touch on all of it, right? But let's talk a little bit about Capstone, because this is part of the Artemis project, right, that would send astronauts back to the moon.
Right.
Can you give us sort of a brief outline of the next steps and the timeline for Artemis?
Sure. I mean, Artemis is going to be happening in the next few months, the very first launch of the Space Launch System. the very first Artemis mission. And we'll start to see much more regular launches of this very large, very impressive rocket taking astronauts back to the moon and ultimately onto Mars. So it's going to be a very, very exciting time. Think about it. For the first time in decades, we will be sending humans beyond low Earth orbit, out into deep space. It's an extraordinarily exciting time.
This is like Neil Armstrong, right? Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin kind of stuff.
Yeah, this time with, you know, some women.
Women. A woman's never walked on the moon.
Never has. A person of color either. And so we're excited to see both happen.
Can I talk to you about being a woman? You think of space exploration from the 50s and 60s, right? And you think of men with, you know, crisp white shirts and the pocket protectors and the T-squares and all that.
Yeah.
You probably remember those images too.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it's better for women. How much better? Is there still work to be done?
Absolutely, there's still work to be done. I mean, I am the first woman director in the 85-year history of this organization. And so there are still barriers to be broken. We've not had a woman head of NASA. You know, there's opportunities here for women to still go higher. But we've got to look at the systems that we have in place. And that's something that I'm excited to dive into here at JPL and really understand. Are the systems that we have in place supporting all the brains, all the brilliant people who are here, who are working to contribute to our mission? Or are there some changes that we need to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to do their best work here?
There are obviously other planets in the solar system.
Yes.
The only one that's closest to us and maybe could be inhabitable is Mars. Maybe. Is it worth doing all this exploration if there's not habitability on these other planets?
So Mars is interesting because it is a place that humans could go potentially live. I think they could probably live on some other objects as well.
Yeah.
But the opportunity to answer an even bigger question, which is, are we alone in the universe? I contend that the next 15 years are going to help us answer that question. Almost certainly we will be able to in that time frame. And that could be Mars. It could be one of these ocean world moons orbiting Jupiter or Saturn. It could be in a planet around another star, not our sun. And we are exploring all those environments in the next decade, decade and a half, trying to answer humanity's most fundamental scientific questions. To me, is an endeavor worth pursuing.
I asked you that question and your eyes just lit up. Like this is your thing.
It is. So we've got to go explore those places so that we can get at the answer to that most fundamental question. Are we alone?
Are we alone?
Are we? I would love to know the answer. That's why I came here. Let's answer that question.
I still see your eyes lighting up.
I love it.
You're
really
excited.
I'm a science geek. I admit it.
Lori Leshin, the new director of NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab here in Pasadena, La Cañada, Flint Ridge. Lori, welcome to LA and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, you don't need a rocket and a capsule to get glimpses of the final frontier. Maybe just to trek up a famous LA mountain. That story is yours right after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with our Space Encore episode of Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Late last year, we told you about a place that's on the edge of space. When night falls, you can stand almost anywhere in the San Gabriel Valley, look to the north at Mount Wilson in the distance, and you'll see the glowing lights of TV and radio antennas spiking into the darkness. But that's not all that's up there. Among the pine trees and coyotes, high above the humdrum terra firma existence of LA mortals, sits the Mount Wilson Observatory. For more than a century, it's been a gateway to the heavens.
6,000 feet up with Mount Wilson Observatory below.
Here's how a newsreel described it in 1930.
Great changes are occurring throughout the universe. The observatory's 100-inch telescope, largest in the world, is daily recording new wonders.
The twin chalk-white domes are home to two aging but still mighty telescopes. The 60 and the 100-inch machines are arguably the most important in the history of astronomy. Superstars of astroscience like Edwin Hubble, George Ellery Hale, and Albert Einstein himself have looked through those telescopes. And you can, too. In case you didn't know, anyone can rent the scopes for the night. That's right, the whole night, complete with an astronomer to guide your trip through the astonishing wonders of the dark and endless firmament. And snacks are included. Reporter Peter Gilstrap made the sundown trip up Angeles Crest Highway to see what happens on Mount Wilson when the stars come out at night.
That's the 100-ton dome turning to accommodate the view of the 60-inch telescope, a move it's been making since things began here so long ago.
In 1908, it was the largest telescope in the world.
That's telescope operator Tom Mason. He's one of a devoted cadre of amateur astronomers and retired engineers who keep things going atop Mount Wilson. He's been volunteering at the observatory for 17 years.
It was the first telescope placed on a mountain this size. It was the first real enactment of the mirror-reflecting type telescope. So you have a lot of history here.
The telescope itself is an industrial latticework of tubular steel angled toward a crack in the dome like a cannon. It's about the size of a crouching Tyrannosaurus Rex, and it's painted baby blue. The tube got here 113 years ago on the back of a truck that barely made it up the winding dirt road from Pasadena. The unbelievably delicate 60-inch mirror that's the reflecting heart of the telescope arrived by a team of pack mules. Since the machine opened its enormous eye on the skies, it's lived to become the granddaddy of virtually every modern scope in existence. And while down below, Los Angeles constantly grows and mutates upon itself, demolishing and building again and again, year after year, up on Mount Wilson, things barely change.
Now, do we have the technology to hook this up to a computer and guide it? Yes. Mount Wilson is not willing to trust this to a computer, and that's why we still operate it by hand.
They don't trust it to a computer. It's a notion that's absolutely breathtaking. And don't even think about cell reception up here. You can look down the eyepiece at an ancient long-dead star still beaming its ghost light toward Earth, but you can't text anyone about it.
The telescope and the whole tower itself obey the slightest touch of the control buttons. At the top, another astronomer gets ready to photograph the heavens. To the scientist, the quarrels and worlds of this small Earth must seem mighty petty as he penetrates celestial mysteries such as these.
Many of those celestial mysteries were solved at the observatory. Scientist Harlow Shapley worked at Mount Wilson from 1914 to 1921. He used the telescopes to determine the size of the Milky Way galaxy. Yes, the size of the galaxy. This guy you've never heard of did that. He also found that Earth was not the center of that galaxy.
So what did that do? That moved us off out here off one of the arms of the galaxy. Great discovery right here with the 60-inch telescope.
Yeah. And a blow to the ego of those who thought we were running the show.
Yes, well, our ego has been blown a couple of times up here because we thought we were the only galaxy there, and then Hubble came along and discovered that, yes, there is another galaxy out there. And now we're in the billions of galaxies type thing.
Does it make you feel very, very tiny when you think about that?
Yes, it does, because of how big this is. But also, as a Christian, it also brings my attention to something. The scripture says, O Lord, O Lord, what is man that you are mindful of him compared to this great universe you made? So as big as it is out there, as everything that's out there, you just keep going and keep going and keep going, and we keep learning about it. And this little dust spot, the Earth, and then I'm a dust spot on that Earth, and he's mindful of me. That's also exciting.
Tom Mason is a member of Christ Community Church in West Covina. Tonight, some of his fellow church members are renting the telescope. Vicky Heim is part of the congregation.
What have you seen here that really impressed you the most?
Oh, I just love Saturn. That's my favorite.
In your mind, how does it work, God versus science, when you look through something like this?
To me, it's just that it couldn't be anything else but God's creation. Just no possibility.
Including the telescope, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
For the 60-inch scope, your rental tab is $1,050 for a half night and $1,700 for the entire night. Throw in the coffee, cold cuts, and brownies with the quasars, nebulas, and white dwarf stars, and it's a hell of a deal. So how did this sanctuary of science become a fun night out for anyone with a credit card? Just too much light. Astronomy loves darkness, and by the late 1990s, Los Angeles had become ground zero for light pollution. As scientific research was moving from Mount Wilson to low-wattage places like Chile, the decision was made to open the facility to the public. This rare opportunity has drawn all kinds of people up the mountain. Some come to marvel, and though there's a strict no-booze policy, others come to party.
Yes, they do. Matter of fact, especially in the other dome tonight, there's even a birthday party going on. So we've had engagements here. We've even had a wedding party to stop by after the wedding, before they start the honeymoon. Now, they didn't stay long, but that's up to them.
Sunshine Day came from Long Beach with an open mind and no real idea of what she would experience. She's not part of the church group. A friend gave her a ticket. Now, as she steps away from gazing through the telescope, she looks stunned, even above her mask.
This is my very first time here.
So tell me what just happened.
Wow. I'm looking at these what appears to be like dots, but they're actually the planets. And as I fine-tune the eyepiece, I can actually see how different the two planets are. It's amazing to be able to see that far.
It's got to be hundreds of miles.
At least. At least from here to New York.
So looking through this mountaintop window into the distant reaches of space, what does she think about?
I think about what's happening out there in the sky is actually also happening inside of me, like all my cells and capillaries, my organs, how things are just kind of orbiting and rotating, how my lungs fill with air, and, you know, that. There's just like this divine order to things. And I don't know much about the stars and those planets and what's out there, but I imagine that macrocosm is sort of like the microcosm within my body, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just, those are the things that I get to think about when I come to places like this. Like having it to rent out and just to be able to come and see this is absolutely awesome.
And so the night goes on. And once again, the howling aria from the aging gears begins as the dome and the telescope slowly turn to chase the shifting stars and galaxies across the sky. And once again, these humble people of Earth, with their coffee and their fascination and their $1,050, wait to approach the telescope, look in, and see the next strange and beautiful wonder. For KCRW, I'm Peter Gilstrap on Mount Wilson.
That's going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, are classrooms and gardens the future of youth justice in L.A.? Check us out anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Geis, Jay Siebold, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, and Holly Adams all had hands on this evening's episode. Special thanks to Mona Holmes and Janaea Williams and Saul Gonzalez for filling in while I've been away. It's good to be back. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.